Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:05 British Summer Time. Well, this being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for global markets and stock markets. So I'll kick off with just what's been happening in here today, and then I'll get on to our sort of major themes and the interrelationships between the markets. So kicking off with stock markets. Well, the Nikkei was down another 1% today, down 131 points. So that's definitely looking like the top or the upper range of the first step above the base, and I'll come back to that major theme later on. But we're definitely in correction zone here at the moment. The Hang Seng held fairly steady, but that was terribly frightening over the last couple of days. So holding its own isn't that bad news. And the ASX in Australia, which really came down hard yesterday, was pretty steady in here today. Fairly similar story for Europe. A lot of these indices closed down, made up a bit of ground during the day, but they've universally closed down on the day. Except for the Swiss market, which is up marginally. The worst performer was the Italian MIB, which was down 247 points. So that's really the only one that is maintaining those losses again in here today. The DAX, which is right at presumed support or potential support around 5,000, it's at 5,007. So we'll see whether that holds up on Monday. Right now, it is looking a little bit better in here, particularly in the US markets, where the Dow Jones, S&P, and NASDAQ are all up on the day, up about a third of 1%. So holding their own in here, and there have been quite significant losses there over the last couple of days. So the fact that the markets are holding up a bit is good news. Now the chances are, because we had this really sharp, rapid reaction against the trend, that we might see a little bit of a recovery next week before we see further losses. Particularly if you look at the chart of the S&P, you are seeing over the short term these lower highs starting to come in, and we do now have lower lows because those August lows have been taken out with gusto. So with that little bit of steadiness in the US, some of these South American markets have rallied quite well in here today. Mexico is up over 1%, so and Brazil is up 3.3%. Just going to pull up that Brazilian chart because it fell about 3% a couple of days ago. So it's pretty much almost countermanded yesterday's dynamic. So that's really quite good action there from Brazil. Whether we're going to see it get back right up to the highs in the same amount of time it came down is, I think, really quite unlikely. But what we can definitely say is that on a global basis, there has been quite a stiff reaction against the overall prevailing trend, which has been accelerating, and we are in a time for a bit of a correction in here right now. Whether it's going to be this sort of long or medium term correction or quite a short term one has really yet to be decided. So we'll really have to wait and see, but I suspect that this is going to be more of a medium term type thing. Now, bonds have been all over the place in here today. US Treasuries were up four right now, or are up four right now, but they've been as low as 113.07 and currently sitting at 114.09. So that really is a massive range on the day, one big number. Bunds have been fairly steady in here. They're at 122.40. So pretty universally across the bond markets, we are seeing a little bit of weakness, particularly in treasuries, but they are right at the bottom of the range, and they are finding a little bit of support around here. So it's not all over there. And currencies as well have really been quite volatile in here today, particularly cable, the US, or sorry, the British pound. British pound had really quite a good day yesterday, and it's given up quite a lot of it in here today. It's down nearly 2 pence, or sorry, 2 cents. It's at 176.10 at the moment. The higher day of the day was nearly 178. So that's quite bearish action there for the pound and strengthen the dollar. Euro has not given up the gains that it made yesterday. It's given up over half a cent though. It's at 121.18. So not at all over for the dollar here quite yet. And the precious metals are doing quite well in here today. Gold is up to up 110 on the future, so that's at 474.45 on spot. Sorry. And that's pretty much right at the top of this short-term range at the moment. And there's the high of the day was around 476, which would have broken above that range. So good action there in gold. Silver is up 17 points at 476 and a half. So that has broken up now from the top of this really quite lengthy trading range in silver. Platinum is up 8.4, so at 939.1, good action there. And palladium is up 5.65 at 204.55. So that's also performing really quite well. But this has been generally a quite a good day for metals across the board. Copper is up 2.50; it's at 180.80. So that's really quite a significant move there. And zinc has also broken to a new high. Aluminium has had really quite a good day, whereas nickel was really very dull, and tin pretty much the same way. Tin sort of languishing around that 6,600 level for quite a while. And lead has had a good day on the it's up 11 on the 3 month future. It's at 970. So that's really quite good action there, and it looks like we're going to go up and test that 1,000 level once more. Some of these softer commodities haven't done really quite so well. The cocoa in particular down 25 on the US contract, so that's put in four successive lower highs now, and that's looking quite weak. Excuse me, the agriculturals or the grains, corn's down a little bit, soybeans up a bit. Wheat, which had that really good dynamic at the beginning of the week, has given up about more than half of it. So oats is probably the best performer of the grains, but really not a lot to write home about. Now moving on to energy, and natural gas has had a bit of a downward break yesterday, but it's steadied up quite a lot in here. It's almost flat on the day right now. It's at 13.90. It's been as low as 13.67, but still really quite steady. So even though there's consistency of the trend is starting to break down, we haven't really had those really big downward dynamics. Not at all. So while it is at the bottom of the range, this is such a volatile trader, I think it's a 50-50 chance whether we're going to see this move back up towards the top, which is around I think 1470, or whether we're going to see a break of trend here. Oil is very steady as well. Although it has weakened now, it's up 9 cents at 61.45, has been as high as 62.23. So it's pretty much all to play for there in the energy markets. So moving on now to the sort of the more global themes, and this action that we're seeing right now in the US markets is pretty much out of character with all the trading activity we've seen over the last 18 months to nearly 2.5 years. These are really quite significant downward dynamics, and that fits in quite well with our overall theme, which is that Wall Street is in a bear market, a secular bear market, which is a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Put in simpler terms, it's a period of mean reversion. During the bubble years leading up to 2000, the trading activity and the prices on the various indices got completely out of whack with what they should have been doing historically, and we're now paying the penalty for that as it reverts back toward the mean. Looking at that part of our definition, the dividend yields, well, right now dividend yields on the S&P are around 2%. At the bottom of the last bear market, they were over 6%. I think they were 6.82%. Well, if you take the mean between those, you've got to have dividend yields of 4%. So we really have still even quite a long way to go to get to the mean, but because markets always overshoot, we're talking about a generational long period where we're going to see these rising dividend yields and lower PE ratios. And what that really means is that the expectations of the investor globally are going to be more focused on value than on growth, because the growth that is factored into these high PEs simply will not be appearing. So what is that going to do to the pattern that we're seeing in stock markets? Well, what we've seen over the last 2 years has been a really good rally within the overall secular bear trend. Now, people tend to associate a bear market with falling prices, But that's not the case in the main. What you normally associate with a bear market is this sort of grinding range trading activity with a downward bias. And what we've seen over the last year and a half in particular, since the bottom in sort of 2002, 2003, we saw a very good rally. And then over the last year and a half, 2 years, we've seen a massive loss of momentum where markets have pretty much been going sideways on Wall Street. And that effect, when we talk about uncoupling from Wall Street, uncoupling is by and large a myth because it's very rare for a country to decouple from the US. And one of the things that we talked about last night was the ability of Japan to uncouple. I think if there was any country that was going to have the potential to uncouple, it might be Japan. But right now, we're seeing Japanese trading activity very, very much in line with everything that we're seeing around the world. So that's not a prospect right now. And if we see evidence of that in the future, and I do believe it's an unlikely event, then it will become quite evident quite quickly. But right now, there's a big difference between what's happening in Japan and what's happening in the US. Because the US is in a secular bear market, but Japan has just completed one. From the highs in 1989, it is only now just completing the break above the base. So what's going to happen next? Right now we're seeing a bit of a correction, and what that is really starting to do is it has delimited the top of that first step above the base. And what we would now expect to see is a bit of a correction and some fairly extensive ranging activity before we get the next upward break and a move into a more consistent uptrend. We don't know how far it's going to come down. It may come down to the top of the range. That's a possibility, but it may not. It may just range around in this area for a while. And we don't really know how long that while is, but what we do know is that once it breaks up once more, there's a very good chance we're going to see it move into a more consistent, rhythmic uptrend. And in a number of years, and that could be really quite a long time, there's good potential there for a new big bull market to develop. But again, that's a number of years away in Japan. So when I've talked all about that and I'm saying that the US is in a bear market, well, we have to think about the impact that the bear market in the US is going to have on global equities. And we talk about the Wall Street leash effect being that, well, most of the money in the world is centered on the US. So when the US is steady to rising, it leaves out the leash and it allows all other markets around the world, particularly emerging markets, to romp on the upside. But when the US catches a cold and starts to move down or contract, that's going to pull in the leash because particularly US investors will be selling assets abroad to plug holes in their portfolio at home. And you'll see significant reversals. In the countries and markets where you have a fundamentally sound story, those markets will more than likely have a reaction, but you will get a progression of rising lows. So they will fall the least and advance the most when the leash starts getting let back out again and the US moves out of recession or whatever problems it will be encountering. On the other hand, those countries and markets which do not have a fundamentally sound story, once they get hit, they are going to languish for quite a long time before you get the investors moving back into that story. So when I say that the US is in a bear market and bear markets are characterized by range trading, there's a good chance that we're going to see the same type of activity now that we saw back in the 60s with the Dow, where there was a generational-long glass ceiling on the Dow around 1025, and we didn't really see the US move into a new bull market until that had been broken up. Well, there's a good chance that on the S&P we could see sort of a glass ceiling develop around 1575. Of course, that's well clear of where we are today, but on the other hand, really not that far away either. So we could see a glass ceiling developing on the S&P that could last for quite a long time. And as long as the US is steady to rising, it's going to leave out plenty of room for advances in other markets. Now, one thing that is really surprising is European trading activity right now. And that's the European markets are doing really, really quite well, out of character with what's happening around the world. While we have had quite significant declines, particularly if you look at that S&P MIB chart that I posted today, it's still maintaining those higher lows. So it does look like, on the very face of it, that you're going to see that European indices are really quite healthy, and this is just a correction. On the other hand, if you look across the other markets, pretty much every market right now is correcting. So this does look more serious, and we would need some pretty good upward dynamics from European bourses to reinforce these higher lows and to put in a higher low right now. If we see a break of this progression of higher lows, that's going to be really quite bearish for European markets. Although we haven't seen that yet, so no need to panic just yet. But one of the big themes in all markets, not just equity markets, is liquidity. Because since Paul Volcker came in and killed off inflation back in 1980, people were more interested in killing off the beast of inflation, and they were beating that dead body for a number of years afterwards, that we had this very long period of deflation. Deflation in asset prices, inflation in the economy. Well, right now, because of the amount of liquidity we have in the system, there's a good chance that we've started on the path to a new inflationary cycle. And largely, until really quite recently, and the energy explosion that we've had really quite recently, no one was talking about inflation. But the amount of liquidity that's been pumped into the system since long-term capital management, the 97 Asian crisis, the Russian debt default, the bubble bursting, Y2K, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Rita, all this liquidity, and that is fueling a number of different markets that wouldn't otherwise have any room to move on the upside at all. And that's pretty much all markets. But fundamentally, if we are into a new inflationary cycle, that is going to benefit hard assets. So the precious metals have a very good argument in front of them, particularly any of the monetary metals like gold or silver. But not just precious metals as commodities are going up because of this incredible demand from emerging markets. And of our we have really two themes, and they're very interlinked. One is emerging markets, particularly emerging Asia. The other one is the resources boom. Because not only have we had a fantastic bull market in government bonds and in equity markets, but we've had an incredible bear market in commodities. So that being the case, there's been incredible underinvestment in that sector. And you haven't had refineries built, and you haven't had lead smelters built in more than 20 years. So there isn't the ability to supply very quickly the demand that is rising out of Asia in particular. So you are seeing a massive drive in the industrial metals and in energy costs. Of the two, because you can't recycle energy, energy's probably the better bet. But on the other hand, metals are a much thinner market, so it is much easier to see very, very big bubbles develop in those quickly. People are exploring for oil all over the world, but how many miners are actually just looking for copper or just looking for zinc? The vast majority of miners are looking for gold because of historic reasons. So the secular bull market in commodities is really only getting started right now. And if you look at the very long-term charts, a lot of these metals are only just breaking up out of their bases. So the only one that hasn't had any kind of reaction whatsoever since it started going up has been copper. And that is a very, very consistent uptrend. But one to buy into on those reactions, and one to keep an eye on for any big dynamics or breaking of that very consistent uptrend. One word about the agricultural commodities, because of the commodity complex, you have the energies and the metals, which are very closely linked to emerging economies, not just China, but of course emerging Asia and India. And India would be is our choice of emerging markets, because it has all the benefits that China has. It has the demographics, it has the educated population, they speak English, but it also has democracy. And in emerging markets, governance is absolutely everything. They also have, because they have the democracy, they have things like rule of law, contract law, and you are pretty sure that if you put your money in there, there's a good chance you'll be able to get it out. Whereas the corruption in China and the opacity of the market has really hurt the stock markets. And if there is no other argument for investing in India over China, all you need to do is look at the price charts. So that's the reason that we favor India over China. But the reason we favor India is because they have world-class beating companies, and because of the charts and the stock market. And fundamentally, they have an amazing growth story. But it's not just China and India growing; it is all of emerging Asia, and they are all very much on the development path. So that leads us into sort of agriculturals, because with this enormous population, are we going to see this massive growth in agriculturals? And it really does depend on the soft commodity we're talking about. For example, sugar, because it can be converted into alcohol and used in cars, has really done very well recently. Orange juice, because of the hurricanes and because of changing patterns in consumption, has done relatively well recently, but not nearly as good as something like sugar. On the other hand, the grains have done particularly badly because of genetic modification and higher yields. On the other hand, they are getting particularly cheap right now, and it would only take a small, of course, these things will always be weather punts, so we're never going to see these really big, long-term trends in the agricultural commodities, because you can always just go out and plant more of them, whereas you can't plant more copper, and you can't just dig up more oil. So we're not going to see those really big long-term moves in the agricultural commodities, but we could very easily see quite tight markets, which could make them inflate really quite quickly. And they are ones to watch around the bottom. And we're coming pretty close to a bottom in quite a few of the grains in particular. Now, looking at currencies, because obviously, particularly when we talk about the precious metals, currencies and the dollar pop into the conversation almost immediately. And traditionally, there has been an inverse relation between between gold and the dollar. And that is really breaking up quite a lot now, because, for example, today you have a relatively strong dollar, and gold is up over a dollar. So we are seeing a greater breakdown of that relationship. And while I don't think that's ever going to disappear because of gold's value as a monetary metal, it is certainly loosening up. And I think part of the reason for that is because it's starting to hit new highs in pretty much all currencies, particularly the reserve currencies. And you can see the reserve currencies in gold, or gold in reserve currencies, on the chart library. So when we see that making new highs in other currencies, that's really telling us that it's being viewed as a store of wealth or of value in a number of other currencies. And that really feeds into the long-term bull market in gold. Obviously, other precious metals are going to be pretty similar, but because gold is more liquid, you are going to see more investors getting in there, and more opportunities to play it with different funds and futures. But the other point about currencies is that you don't get these generational long trends in currencies either. because no country wants to have a strong currency for a generation. So you'll get these 2 and 3 year long trends, and often if you do get it moving, for example, when you had the euro moving down almost from inception, it took multilateral intervention. That almost always works. Actually, there's never been a case where multilateral intervention hasn't changed the direction of the market. So you don't want to be betting against the central banks of the world. But what we often see in currencies are pretty rangy tops and bottoms. So you don't really get these generational long trends. They'll trend for a couple of years and then it'll range around for a couple of years. And looking at the dollar index right now, we have had some really good action out of the dollar, where it rallied from the lows around 80 up to around 90, and it's been ranging around 90 for the last couple of months. And it's by no means clear yet whether it's going to move up or down out of that, but given that the top versus the euro, or sorry, the top in the dollar index was really quite rangy and ranged around for 18 months, there's no reason to believe that we couldn't see the same sort of thing around the bottoms. When we're trading currencies, what we try to do is to match the best and the worst currencies, and we try to look for differences in yield. So that's the reason I think David has been trading Canadian dollar and Japanese yen, trying to match the strongest with the weakest. And Canadian dollar in here today is relatively strong. It's at 107, sorry, 117.46, so that's down 64. So it's strengthened the Canadian dollar versus the US dollar. Unfortunately, I was stopped out of that yesterday, which was a bit annoying because my stop was at 118. I should probably have had it a little bit higher, given it a little more room. But well, that's the way the cookie crumbles, unfortunately. Now, just a quick word about the wine and cheese. I think it went really quite successfully yesterday. I think everyone was really happy, and I think most people would like to come to the next one. But what we're trying to do is give everyone who wants to come an opportunity to come along, and next time round we're going to have some people from Slovenia and I think a couple of other countries. So people are popping into us on, when they come over for business or on a holiday, I think. So anyone who wants to come along will be more than welcome. We are limiting the numbers to 8 because we're holding them in our boardroom, and our boardroom's really not that big. But I've got 2 dates up on the chart on the comment of the day today, and we'll be doing them every month, so we'll try to accommodate everyone. If I do have any extra spaces on upcoming meetings, I'll post them on the comment of the day, and it'll be on a first come first served basis. If they're still empty, I'll on a rotational basis, I'll allow people who've been there before to come back for one more. As these go on, I'm sure everyone who wants to come will get a chance to come at least once, and I'm sure quite a few people will get a chance to come twice. But if there's anything you need, please don't hesitate to contact me, and thank you for your time.